terminal stage of the Democratic Party, and slim hope for an honest conclave. Today, in Church and State, Ryan McCall and Christopher Ferrara discuss the importance of the 2024 ballot, especially as regards abortion being made a so-called right in state constitutions, as has happened in Ohio, Michigan, Vermont, and California. Up to 10 states may have such an amendment on their ballot in November. Given the failing health of Pope Francis, there's a high probability we'll see a papal conclave this year. Regrettably, in the recent past, cardinals have not kept their oath of secrecy regarding conclave proceedings.
Welcome to another edition of Church and State with Chris Farrar and Brian McCall. Christ is risen.
Yes, indeed he is, and he will vanquish the insanity that we're witnessing today. But, you know, here we are again to chronicle it.
That's right. Well, it's yet another Easter presided over by the second Catholic president of the United States, the incredibly devout Orthodox, that's an alternate reality, Joe Biden. But this guy, actually, he's not just a fallen away Catholic. He just wants to, like, kick people in the teeth. He just doesn't want to do dumb things. He's got to, like, really dig the knife in deeper. So on March 29th, he issued a presidential proclamation declaring March 31st, Easter Sunday, Transgender Visibility Day. It's a national holiday for transgender. But then he doesn't even have the guts to say what he's doing when he's called out on it, and his pathetic press secretary, Pepe Le Pew, whatever her name is, Pepe Le Pew, says, oh, he didn't declare it on Easter. He declared it on March 31st, which happened to be Easter.
Well, again, that's their defense, that it always falls on March 31st, so that sooner or later, if it stays on that date, it's going to fall on Easter Sunday. So their defense is, oh, no, we didn't proclaim it for Easter. Well, in fact, they did, because they knew that this year on the calendar, it would fall on March 31st, Easter Sunday. And so what did they do? Did they just let it pass by quietly, as has happened in previous years? No, they did a proclamation this year. They proclaimed the recurring date as Transgender Visibility Day. They didn't have to proclaim it. It's just there on the calendar. So right. They knew exactly what they were doing. They were proclaiming it to coincide with Easter Sunday. Even if it's always on the same date every year, this year it was a proclamation to make it extra special.
Exactly. But again, I guess they really need a visibility day, because nobody ever talks about it.
Oh, no.
No visibility for any of these people. You know, I guess they need one day, right?
No, I'm looking at something by GLAAD, the homosexualist activist network, with the LGBTQ community calendar for the various awareness dates of various sexual disorders. Remember, we Catholics believe that sexual relations outside of marriage are mortally sinful, and that the relations between members of the same sex are gravely disordered. We still allowed to believe that, I guess, right? Because our catechism does teach that, notwithstanding the attitude of the current pope. So these disorders are celebrated in various awareness days in February, March, April, May, June, August, July, October, November, December. Every month of the year, you have some sort of awareness date for the various sexual disorders. And, you know, Jesse Waters last night on Fox News said, after reeling off about 10 or 15 of these awareness days, gee, can't we have one day for Easter?
Right. Exactly.
The relentless, pervasive propaganda defies belief. You know, I tell you what, in defense of Biden, he is so far gone mentally. Did he even know what he was signing when this proclamation was put in front of him? I guess he was informed of it after the fact, and now he would defend it, but I mean, basically, can't they just get him to sign anything they put in front of him at this point?
Well, probably, but I mean, he's made his bed, so he's put himself in this position. I mean, he's not mentally competent to stand trial, but he can declare things, I guess.
Yeah, well, don't look for consistency. You never find that in the liberal mentality, so.
But again, this is worse because you talked about sort of, you know, sexual deviancy, but this is actually sort of even worse than that because it's basically denying the immutability of reality. And when you talk to people about this, you kind of go, they have no logical stopping point. So if you say, well, look, if you can be transgender, why can't I be trans age? Like, what if I just want to decide my birth date? I want to, you know, choose to be a different birth date. Or what if I want to be trans species and just decide I'm a dog? So I get to go and pee on the grass because I'm a dog. Like, where does it stop logically? And they don't really have an answer.
Well, that's what this whole movement is about, because the capstone of creation, earthly creation, is, of course, man. I remember when the first man on the moon said, this is a small step for a man, a giant step for mankind. That's when we used to say there's such a thing as mankind, because God created man and woman, but woman comes from man. We believe literally, as Pope Leo XIII teaches in his encyclical on marriage, that Eve was created from Adam. That's a teaching of the infallible ordinary magisterium down through the centuries. And Leo said no one may deny this. It doesn't mean women are inferior. It means that the two are literally of one flesh, which is what marriage is all about.
Yeah.
So the union of the sexes in marriage doesn't abolish the distinction between the sexes, which is divinely ordained. So if you attack that, you're attacking the whole created order, because man is at the top of the created order. If you deny the distinction between the sexes in mankind, man and woman, man and woman, who comes from man, and you deny the created order, which is what modern philosophy is all about, denying what we call substances, which are the unity of matter, and a form, which is a divine conception of the way a thing should be. A cat is a cat, a dog is a dog, a man is a man, a woman is a woman. They attack that created order because it points to the existence of the creator. This is all about a rebellion against the existence of God and divine authority and the natural and divine law.
Well, ultimately, this movement, again, is, I think, blasphemous, because if you think about it, what it's really saying is, oops, God made a mistake. He was supposed to create me a woman, but he slipped up and kind of was distracted, maybe, you know, looking at something else at the moment and, you know, touched the wrong thing, and he made me something that I was not supposed to be. I mean, that's really what you're saying. God, you made a mistake in the way you made me.
Well, back when medical science, like the rest of science, was reasonably honest, I would say this would be before the 1970s, when politics began to intrude into the various areas of medical science, as we saw during the so-called pandemic. Back then, it was called gender dysphoria. It was a disorder. It's still used, the term gender dysphoria, meaning there's a problem, a mental problem with this person. And there are some rare cases where people are genuinely confused and have a psychiatric disorder about which sex they are, even though their organs determine biologically what they are. And these people need help. We're not condemning these people. We're saying that they need assistance in overcoming this problem. And also, studies show that any confusion that some children have in this regard tends to disappear after adolescence, which is why a lot of these poor, unfortunate children who were transitioned by their disgustingly trendy parents live to regret what was done to them, the mutilation that was forced upon them by these idiotic, incompetent, dangerous parents who go along with this trend, which is, someone has described it, I don't know who, as a social contagion. Even Bill Maher, the liberal comedian, talk show host, said, if this is supposedly a natural phenomenon, how come it's so regional?
Right.
How come it's bi-coastal? You know, the liberals of the West Coast and the liberals of the East Coast boast about their trans children. We never heard about this 10 years ago.
No. Well, and again, you point that out about a psychological disorder. I mean, again, it's equivalent if I went around thinking I was Napoleon. So I think I'm Napoleon. You say you're delusional. We need to treat you. You don't say, well, let's move you into the Élysée Palace and let you start ruling France. Because if you think you're Napoleon, you must be Napoleon.
Well, listen to this description, the new description of gender dysphoria. This is from Boston Children's Hospital, where they invite you to have your child mutilated. Gender dysphoria occurs when there is a conflict between the sex you were assigned at birth. No one assigns a sex at birth. You have it at birth, and it's simply noted on the birth certificate. and the gender with which you identify. This can create significant distress and can make you feel uncomfortable in your body. People with gender dysphoria may want to change the way that they express their gender. This may mean changing the way they dress, transitioning socially, listen to this, transitioning medically or surgically, or some combination of these. Now, this was never recommended before as an ordinary approach to the problem of gender dysphoria, that you mutilate a child who's confused about his body, forever render him incapable of conceiving if he's a male or a female by removing the sexual organs. This is absolutely abominable. And yet now it's supposedly standard medical procedure. That's how rapidly this contagion has spread.
And being proclaimed by the person sitting in the office.
Yeah, well, Senator Tuberville just said the other day, yeah, the senator from Alabama, that the Democrat Party is a satanic cult. I think we're still free to say that without being arrested or visited by the FBI. And if a senator can say that, it's certainly true. I mean, to promote this kind of thing on Easter Sunday by way of a proclamation indicates diabolical disorientation.
No, it is a again, it's all disorientation because it's a denial of reality, but it's really the end stage of liberalism, because liberalism basically says what I want, I can do. There are no external constraints on what I want. There's no concept of moral liberty. And so, you know, you just keep knocking down barriers and you're going to keep getting to this sort of T.S. Eliot wasteland where we are, where whatever I dream up, I can do, I can be.
Well, yeah, the social revolution we're witnessing was preceded, as you and I know from our studies, by a philosophical revolution during the so-called moderate enlightenment, which is when the attack on common sense, which involves the created order, this is a man, this is a woman, that is a cat, this is a dog, that's when the attack began. Attack on the idea of a substance, that God makes beings as unities of matter and form. And they are forever that thing and not another thing. A dog cannot become a cat, or a cat a dog, or a man a woman, or a woman a man. They have to attack that created order in order to bring about their social revolution. You can be anything you want to be. In fact, it was the philosophers of the moderate so-called enlightenment, Locke and Hobbes in particular, who first attempted to deny the humanity of the unborn child, saying, in effect, we don't know what's in the womb. It's becoming something, but we don't know what it is. It could be a monster. So when you see early on in the philosophical revolution an attack on the created order, you know that the origin of the problem we see today goes all the way back to the 18th century, the 18th and late 17th century.
Well, even earlier. I mean, I'd say it goes back to Occam in, you know, several centuries
ago. Oh, you can trace it all the way back. Yeah. You can trace it all the way back to the sophists during the Greek.
Yes, that's true. Well, again, here's where we are as a state, but maybe this proclamation will go away next year if we get a change of occupants of the White House, but that's still to be seen. We have a lot between now and November to occur. But actually, one point before we move on to the church, I want to point out, we have to remember it's not all about the presidential election. There's going to be a lot more on the ballot in November. Just for example, yesterday, the Supreme Court of Florida may issue two rulings. One, they put into effect the abortion limitation, even the media calls it a ban, the abortion limitation of 6 weeks that had been passed by the Florida legislature over 2 years ago, but was being blocked. They allowed that to go into effect. But they also allowed on the ballot measure an attempt to change the Florida Constitution to reverse all that and make the right to kill your child a constitutional right under the Florida Constitution. There's several states that are going to have ballot measures like this. And so, even beyond who becomes president, maybe even more importantly, that's going to be an important issue on the ballot around this country in November.
Well, this gets us into the whole issue of what the Supreme Court is empowered to do. And I've had arguments with fellow attorneys about the scope of Supreme Court review, particularly judicial review of the question of the right to life. And I've always taken the position that it should be obvious from common law, from the entire so-called Judeo-Christian tradition, that a child in the womb is a life in being and ought to be protected under the Fifth Amendment as applied to the states through the 14th Amendment. So that any law that authorizes the killing of unborn children would violate the Due Process Clause. You don't even have to get to so-called substantive due process, which is where
procedural.
There is no due process for the murder of an innocent.
Yeah.
So if abortion laws come before the Supreme Court, St. Thomas teaches that judges must disregard as no law at all, a law that contravenes the divine and natural law. Even Martin Luther King said that in his letter from the Birmingham jail.
Absolutely.
So if you have a legislation from a state that authorizes the killing of innocents in the womb with no process whatsoever, there being no due process for murder of innocents, the Supreme Court would be duty-bound to strike it down. Instead, we have, you know, conservative judicial positivism. Let the people decide. So now we're going to see in all the blue states constitutional amendments or statutory provisions providing for the right to kill your child in the womb. It's murder.
Yeah.
Legalized.
No, and you're right. Beyond Thomas and maybe Alito, I don't think there's anybody on the court right now that would rule that way.
No.
No.
But they could. What's the point of life tenure? You can't defend the natural law.
Exactly.
And by the way, every one of them takes an oath. So help me God.
Yes.
But then they have to forget God when they're sitting at the bench.
Exactly. Well, and they sit in a bench above which is Moses the lawgiver, is the portrait above where they're sitting. But
right.
I have
Moses
to forget
the Ten Commandments right over their heads, which they have to ignore.
Exactly. Well, speaking of ignore, let's turn over to Rome and an oath.
Must we?
An oath that got ignored. Interesting. On Good Friday, Pope Francis did not go to the Stations of the Cross and the Colosseum. The announcement was because of ill health. So as his health does seem to spiral further and further, we seem to be inching closer and closer to the next conclave. And maybe in light of that, he is Pope Francis published a book called The Successor, which is referring to himself, My Memories of Benedict the 16th. And again, shockingly, and very few news outlets are pointing this out, he basically violates a solemn oath he made. Because all the cardinals who go into the conclave swear an oath to keep secret the events that occur during and after that conclave. And he basically then spills the beans in a book, although he may get around this one because in my view, I think he's not actually revealing anything because I don't think he's telling the truth, but I'll see what you mean. He basically says in the 2005 conclave upon the death of John Paul II, when Joseph Ratzinger was elected, Benedict XVI, that he, Bergoglio, was a Ratzinger man. He was behind Ratzinger. And to his great surprise, he found out days into the conclave that there were cardinals who were using him as a candidate to draw votes away from Ratzinger to get a third candidate elected. And when he found out that he was being misused by these people, he threw all of his weight and voted for Ratzinger. Now, first of all, do you believe him? And secondly, what do you make of these revelations now?
Well, I don't know whether to believe him or not, but it seems that his reference to the two-thirds majority is misplaced because it was Benedict that restored the two-thirds requirement, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
To avoid precisely the outcome we now see, although he got two-thirds and became Pope. Mm. So as far as revealing the proceedings of the conclave, I guess he gets around it by saying, well, I'm the Pope. I'm not bound by that oath. I just relieved myself of any obligation.
Yeah.
Much like the President of the United States can declassify any document he pleases.
Yes, I guess. Well, it reminds me of, was that Mel Brooks movie? It's good to be the king. You can do whatever you want.
Well, I don't know whether it's true or not, but now we are looking at a situation where I can't see how much longer he can last. Hmm. He's no longer able to walk. He basically sits 24/7. Maybe once in a while he'll stand, but even when he did his foot kissing and foot washing ceremony this year, only women. Mm-hmm. An exact diabolical inversion of the mandatum. He just decides all women are going to have their feet washed. When he did that, even there he was sitting. They had them on an elevated platform, and he wheeled his chair up to this platform, and all he had to do was lean forward. So he can't get out of the wheelchair at this point.
Mm.
And he's put on a tremendous amount of weight. He's not breathing very well. So I think we're looking at a conclave in the very near future.
But what kind of a conclave?
Come out of that, though.
Yeah. I mean, with these machinations that he's talking about in 2005, the machinations we know, again, from other leaks about the 2013 conclave, where there was a vote thrown out and then a third vote taken. You know, what hope do we have of the next one, humanly speaking?
Well, in church and state alike, it seems we're reaching a terminal state of affairs. Something big is going to happen. which will resolve the situation in a dramatic way. Maybe for the worse, maybe for the better, but whatever it's going to be, it'll be very dramatic. We're going to see things this year that we have never seen before in the history of church or state. This pontificate is already something we have never seen before in the history of the church. But now even the unprecedented pontificate will bring forth further unprecedented events in what has to be the final year of this pontificate. I can't imagine it can go on another 2 years like this. Mm. So, you know, take hope in the fact that this is a terminal state of affairs. We all sense that something very dramatic is going to happen this year to bring about a resolution. And, you know, in salvation history, these periods are always critical in terms of a restoration. When we reach the stage where everything seems lost, that's when the restoration begins, and that's what Our Lady of Good Success said at Quito, Ecuador.
Well, and it is interesting because 2025, which will be the next year, is a jubilee year. It's the first jubilee, major jubilee we've seen since the year 2000. So it's kind of an interesting fact that the next year after this year, I think you're right, of major transitions, that there will be in a jubilee year.
It's unavoidable. All events are pointing to a breaking point.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen in this year, the year of our Lord, 2024. We just don't know exactly what's going to happen, but we know it's going to be something very big in both church and state.
Yes, exactly, because it's all moving in that direction. I mean, in the state, we have this moving towards an election, which, you know, they're trying to do everything they can to keep the front runner candidate off the ballot. And it's interesting. I, over Easter at dinner with some friends and somebody at the dinner, it's interesting, works in the Bronx in New York. And he was saying, I think it's within grasp that Trump could win New York in the next election. He said, I work in the Bronx and I'm in neighborhoods that, you know, have voted solid Democratic for decades. And I can't meet somebody that's not a Trump supporter. He's basically, you know,
What I'm talking about. When you reach this stage, there's a turnaround.
Yeah.
People have had their faces rubbed in the reality of what the Democrat Party has become over the last 10 years or so. And the Democrats of today would not even be recognized by the Democrats of 50 years ago. The Democrats of 50 years ago would look upon these people as lunatics and savages.
Yeah.
So that's what's happening. Biden's losing the Hispanic vote. Black support has diminished dramatically by up to 30 points.
Yep.
Without the black vote and the Hispanic vote, I don't see how Biden wins unless they manage to dump a lot of ballots into a lot of drop boxes at the last minute.
He has left is college-educated white suburban women is essentially the only demographic he has.
Well, let's not even touch that subject.
Exactly.
But I just read somewhere, I forget the news source, that some election official in Georgia refused to certify the Fulton County results during the last presidential election because there was no signature verification on 147,000 ballots. 147,000 mail-in ballots were not verified in terms of the signature. And how do you really verify that many ballots when millions are being mailed?
Yeah.
So now we have a structure for our elections in which the post office is election central. And we're relying on the United States Post Office to bring in the votes. So we have an inherently untrustworthy system now, which is why mail-in balloting, by the way, was banned in Europe decades ago because of the potential for fraud. And let's not forget that the Attorney General Barr, during an interview with one of the mainstream journalists, I forget which, I think it might have been NBC, said, look, if you invite no excuse mail-in ballots and you mail them out to millions of people, you're playing with fire. It's an invitation to fraud and coercion. That's what he said when he was working for Trump. Now he's singing a somewhat different tone, but we have to worry about the upcoming election, the integrity of the process, but we'll see. We'll see. It looks promising, unless they can get Trump into a jail cell, which would be preposterous. But
we'll see. With Funny Willis still on the case, we'll see.
Well, there's a nice appeal going in the Georgia appellate court over the judge's decision to allow Fannie Willis to decide which of the two of them she or her paramour would be disqualified. That's hilarious, by the way. You're both conflicted, but I'll let one of the conflicted attorneys decide which of them goes.
Right. Exactly.
That's ripe for appellate review, and the judge tellingly authorized an interlocutory appeal. In other words, an appeal in the middle of the case. He wants the appellate court to do what he should have done.
Yeah, exactly.
Lots of promising developments as we reach this terminal stage.
Absolutely. Well, and as we do, remember to do your part. Remember the 100 by 100 challenge of the Fatima Center to get 100,000 first Saturday observances by 2025 when we have the 100th anniversary of Our Lady's request for the first Saturday. And in fact, most of what you need to do, you're probably doing, you may be doing already. You have to go and make the community of reparation, go to communion within 8 days, say the 5 decades of the rosary, meditate for 15 minutes on the mystery of the rosary, and offer all this to, in reparation, the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And again, that's something 100% within our control we can do. And it's Our Lady's request. And she's our hope in this this time. So look at the FatimaCenter.org 100 by 100 challenge if you want to join.
And let's not forget the power of the rosary. The Lord of History uses the rosary as his nuclear weapon for social change. We've seen it before in history. We will see it again. Keep praying the rosary every day.
Absolutely. Well, great. Happy Pascua season to you, Chris, and we'll see you again in a couple of weeks.
Happy Christian Visibility Day.
Exactly. Well done.
This episode of Church and State is brought to you by the Fatima Center. Copyright 2024, all rights reserved. For more resources and to support this vital apostolate with your donation, visit our website, fatima.org, or call us at 1-800-263-8160. And please join us in offering Our Lady a spiritual bouquet of 100,000 First Saturdays for the 100th anniversary of Our Lady's request of this devotion. Sign up for this First Saturday Challenge, 100 by 100. Update your status and track our progress around the world at fatima.org 100 by 100. Along with the consecration of Russia, the First Saturday devotion is one of the two principal means by which God wills to establish in the world devotion to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. For peace in the world and in the Church, and more importantly, for the conversion and salvation of many souls, it is essential that every Catholic live the Fatima message. Our Lady of the Rosary, pray for us. Long live Christ the King.